Good evening, January 22nd, 2019. We're here for the Town of Richmond Select Board, and we have a list of interesting items in our board agenda. Before we begin our discussion of the items on the agenda, welcome members of the public. Are there any public comments?
Hi there, thank you, Mary Gould. I know that there's a conservation issue on the agenda ahead, but I am on the conservation committee, and one of the things that I think the select board needs to modify as it relates to the conservation committee rules is, as a taxpayer and paying into that fund, I think the select board has the ultimate responsibility for dispersal of funds. There is a feeling within the board that only the conservation group can determine where the money's spent, and I think that's foul, and I think ultimately it's the select board who has the ability to disperse or take the funds, if you're short somewhere else and there's funds. And specifically, I'll talk about the riprap. That's what's going to be addressed later. But I think that you need to take a look at the rules for the conservation fund and how they're dispersed. And I think that the town might be under the town folks who voted for it initially. When you bat around a number like $20,000 to anything, I think a lot of folks think you have to vote for it. The only time you have to vote when there's a dollar value of that magnitude is when there is an acquisition of property where title transfers. So I think those two things need to be looked at. I have a question. I know that in the budget there's money for the audit. What is the audit time frame? And it seems to me like it's late. Anyone have any idea on that?
Well, so let me just close the first topic by saying I'm looking at the Conservation Reserve Fund policy.
Okay.
And I looked at Article 9 of 2015 language, which is pretty explicit. So we can talk about that when we get to item H.
Okay, thank you.
And then the town audit timing question.
It feels like it's late. I may be wrong, but it feels like it's late by months.
I'm not sure. I need to look into that as well. It feels like it's late to me a little bit too. Connie, do you know the answer to that? I see Connie in the back here.
Yes, it is late.
Do you know when we usually get it and when we expect it?
Usually we're supposed to present the audit in February. They did some last adjusting entries about 2 weeks ago. So I'm waiting for their draft, and then I have about 8 hours worth of work for the beginning, for the part that we handle. Then they'll give us a final, and they'll come and present in February.
Perfect.
I got behind because of three town managers and a budget meeting started late, so I couldn't respond to them exactly when I should have.
So it's delayed, but on its way.
And what procedure is followed for any and all job openings? Specifically, I'm trusting that all applications are to be channeled to the town manager as a neutral and non-preferential observer. And I would like to know if there is an actual application other than a letter of interest. And to me, it's necessary that there be a legal form so that everyone is asked or presents the same information, so that at the point of application, everyone is essentially on equal footing. And the one question that I think might not be there, and because of our personnel policies, it needs to be asked, is there a familial relationship of the applicant to anyone in the department? And I do not believe that to be an unfair question. And to that end, I was thinking that there was also a family relationship in the library. Would anyone know about that?
So according to our personnel policy, I haven't actually seen an application form, though I do think that's a good idea, and if we don't have one, we probably should have one. Right now what we've seen is letters of interest and resumes. Does anybody else know if there's an actual form? Okay, so I think that's something we should address, because I agree with you, getting some standardized information would be a good path going forward. And for the hiring that we've had, we've been following the personnel policy as it's currently written. And there is not a familial relation in the library that I'm aware of. However, The new water and sewer position that we did just hire is actually Rebecca's son, and he applied.
Okay, but that's different departments.
Different departments, the water and sewer. He had we followed the policy as far as getting his letter of interest, his resume, his reference checks. We advertised it correctly. So we did everything according to our policy right
there.
Okay,
that's good. And I do follow up with those kinds of things, and I appreciate your time, effort, and interest in that. But I know that you can't work in the library and have your mother working as your supervisor or whatever that scenario might be. So that's just a caution. And I think when an application is formalized or accepted by the town, there does need to be that question. And I do not believe that to be unfair. And for the purposes of earning benefits like vacation, sick time, and holiday, what is the schedule of hours to be part-time and be considered by that? I specifically look at a timesheet on a regular basis where someone works 10 hours a week and seems to get holiday time or sick time, and I just don't understand that.
So right now, according to our personnel policy, everything is prorated, and there is no minimum as far as hours worked for part-time to full-time. So essentially, for sick time, part-time workers earn 1 hour for every 40 hours worked, and they accrue that. And when they have a holiday or a vacation, they accrue that on a prorated basis. So say you work 20 hours a week, you instead of taking 8 hours for that holiday, you get a four-hour credit for that holiday for that.
Like comp or something like that?
I have a suggestion.
Like a holiday, so you would take the holiday day off and you would take your 4 days off.
In the light of time, and it starts to turn into an agenda item, maybe we should warn this as a future agenda item to talk about the personnel policy, hiring process. There may be a cluster of things mm-hmm. that other folks may be interested in when we dive into them. Maybe warn it as an agenda item in a discussion.
Right answer. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I would like to see a standard hiring form. I think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. If that's something you could bring back to us at a future meeting.
And on the personnel policy, that is one of my goals as we've been going through this actually with VLCT as well, some suggestions to look at the policy in general. So in the future, I know we'll be coming back with some suggested changes and some time for review.
Who's taking the job at some location other than, hey, there's an opening here, are you interested, means that the public has to be aware of it. So mm-hmm. that as well as an application, I think, are very important. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. What goes on a standard hiring form?
Depends on who's hiring you for what.
I mean, I guess I would say it's okay that a letter of intent is. I mean, I think you can read a lot into somebody by how they form their letter of interest and how their application is formatted.
But
in
the
some ways,
the information is going to be the same. If you're a better writer than I am, and I can still perform the job, you know, 50% faster than you.
Well, then I wouldn't be a very good hiring person if I evaluated for hiring a job based on how your writing was in the letter of intent.
So that's exactly what you suggested, and I think an application removes that.
I think I'm going to take the chair's prerogative and say we're getting back into a discussion of an agenda item that wasn't warned or noticed, and we could revisit this, like what it should or shouldn't look like in a future agenda item. Does that make sense to you?
Makes sense.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comments? Diving into item A, town report, final review of FY20 budget. And this includes a modification to include an allocation of EV charging station from unassigned funds. So that is a new item, and that's why it's called out here.
Yeah, so that's just an update. That's the only change that we made after going back and reviewing it from our board meeting 2 weeks ago, was that we caught that the board had approved the electric vehicle charging station grant, and with that grant, should we be awarded that grant, there's about $1,800 that we would need to pay out of this year's budget. So I have a draft of the budget that we added that $1,800 in, but then offset it with $1,800 from unassigned funds. So the overall tax increase remains at 2.04. So that's a suggestion. You could choose to go other ways.
While you're thinking about that, I'll just say that I've been contacted by one taxpayer who said, hey, you know, you've got a lot of money in the bank. Maybe you should use more of your unassigned funds in the current year to reduce the tax increase. So I know we discussed that. I just point out that we're not quite done, and just mentioned that's a comment that I heard for your consideration.
In addition to
what we've already done.
What we've already done to reduce those fund balances. Wow. Well, this would be a step in that direction.
But this is, this 1800 is then, is the matching funds for the
grant.
That's the matching funds for the grant.
Correct. The full grant is closer to 25, 28,000, something like that.
And this would truly be one time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, arguably it's a good expense to pull from unassigned because it's a one time that ongoing.
And we were arguing about the $50.
Well, we weren't.
I move that we take 1800 out of unassigned funds and put it towards the match for the electric charging station grant.
I'll second that.
Okay, further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And it was unanimous? So that's a specific modification. The financial information to include in the town report and then the town meeting warning.
So in addition to the budget in the town report, in the past we've had, let's see, there was the revenue fund balance or reserve fund balances, which would be at the end of the fiscal year. So we'll put those in there for the end of June 30th, 2018. Mm-hmm. There's also been a note ongoing about the Richmond Village Housing Note Receivable, which is a loan to the Richmond Village Housing Project Limited Partnership in 1999. It is deferred until March of 2029. And I know David asked me some other questions that I'll dig into a bit. Roger.
What?
It's something that looks like it's been in the town report for years, and I'm sure other people have a lot more information about it. But we'll put the same notice in there and dig in and try to answer some other any other questions that may pop up due to that. There's also been a line or a chart of budget to actual for revenues and expenditures, which I believe that I can, some of this I had to go back and find Jeff's previous spreadsheets and try to reverse engineer them a little bit to figure out how we can put that together, but we can get that one. The one that I reached out to Jeff on was statement of taxes raised. He said it's a bit complicated to put together, so I'm going to do what I can to get that ready in time to publish. I'm a little remiss. I didn't start this a bit earlier, but kind of realizing it needs to go in right now. So my plan is if I can get it to a point by Monday when Linda needs it, that I'm confident that it's accurate, we'll put it in the town report. If I can't, I will make sure that I get that shortly after. Anybody who's interested can come into the office and take a look at it.
Another item that we discussed briefly was the presentation at Select Board the night before town meeting where it's an overview. So another opportunity to present it. If you do it in PowerPoint, we can also post the PowerPoint on the website.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of different vehicles for communicating that, I think.
Okay.
It's good for public information, but it's also good for a dress rehearsal. Sometimes there's a trick sell in a spreadsheet that we don't notice until we go live. Less embarrassing for the six people that come out the night before.
Good point.
Less entertaining, Tony.
Josh, if you need help, if there's anything I can do to help you out with that, let me know.
Nice. Sure. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for
letting
me mess around with it.
Yeah. I think it's more like trying to pull the numbers out of NEMRIC and make a match up. But yes, I'll, you know, if there's something I can, you know, if you have some time, we can look at it. And this is one of those things where next year I'll have this done in December. Just
the first time out is the more difficult time.
Right.
Well, do we need a motion to approve the budget for vote?
I think we just did that for the budget document itself.
Did the budget. And
the rest is really, I think, conversational as opposed to motion?
I think on the fund balances, yeah.
We did that for the budget last week.
And now we just included the EV charging station
adjustment. Oh, right. We did that. We did a pending something last week or no? Did we do a pending something?
I think just making sure pending that.
Oh,
we
pending
the
last double check.
Yeah.
A last copy.
Which we did and cost $1,800.
Okay. And then is any other financial information in the town report conversation?
Nope.
Okay. Finalize and sign the town meeting warning. So we have a formal warning, which both published and it goes in the town report, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
So, this is looking for a formal motion to approve the official warning of the annual town and school meeting.
So moved.
Second.
As presented in front of us here today. Further conversation? Do you want to look at this again in hand?
Do you guys want to read the back?
Here, do you want a copy?
If
you two
want to
look at a copy?
I saw one earlier today.
Oh,
perfect.
Thank
you.
Okay.
So it includes the notice of the MMU School District Budget Informational Meeting, the annual meeting, so there's a February 21st and 28th, and then a Town of Richmond town meeting on Monday, March 4th, including the proposed budget and Australian ballot items. And of course, there's always the chance of motions from the floor.
Yep. Move to approve the town meeting warning.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That was unanimous also. I'll pass this around for signature. Thank you. Yes. On to item B, update on the buttermilk development, and you have a couple of documents that came in Friday-ish?
End of last week, yeah.
Yes. So I brought out both the November 30th update on the creamery and a memorandum. So Josh, I think you and Jess have been immersed in this deeper than I have. Do you want to take a cut at explaining it?
Yeah, I've got. Does anybody want an update for the letter from December? Do you guys want that? There's a few of you up here. Jess, you probably are better versed. Do you want to take a crack at summarizing the last few days on this?
Yeah. Last 2 weeks, kind of week and a half.
Yeah.
Sure. So. I can't remember if it was last Monday or the Monday before. I got a phone call from the state fire marshal asking if we had approved 14 units in building one of the buttermilk development. And since I'm not the zoning administrator, I wasn't sure, so I looked. Everything I saw said 10 units. I called Suzanne at her other job and confirmed 10 units. I looked at their Act 50 permit, 10 units. Called Kendall, confirmed across the board. Everything said 10 units. So when Suzanne came back here on that Wednesday, I had her reach out to Buttermilk and say, what's going on? Are you putting in 14? And they said, oh yeah, we sent you a letter in November that said we were doing 14. We thought it was we were good to go. And Suzanne was like, that's not how it works. So basically, Suzanne said, these are your channels. You have to go back to the DRB. You can't just add units, whether they, you know, could be filled or not. Doesn't matter. You still have to follow the process. She informed them about their Act 250 that they have to change that. It changes stuff with the state fire marshal as well, which is why they called us
water
to verify.
Sewer.
Changes their water sewer allocation. And right now, because their interim zoning has expired, they can't even get the existing units, let alone the 14. So even if they did go back to the DRB really can't approve that additional units unless the Planning Commission changes the current regulations between now and whenever they go to the DRB. And that's where we are at now.
So when I tried to resurrect this afternoon at lunchtime, I pulled out the November 30th update on the creamery letter, which includes a couple of phrases, November 30th, 2018, which they handed to us in early December. Yeah, I think it's the same. It's just a different format. Under tenant update, it says the current unit, under commercial, it says the current permitted use will not change as all our office or service providers.
Yeah, it's still 14.
And then it says for this building, the first two floors will be commercial and the top two floors will be residential with 14 units ranging from studios to two bedrooms. So while they embedded some language in an update, they didn't ask for approval to increase from 10 to 14. It just sort of it seems to have been embedded. And I'd be somewhat struck if they thought embedding it in a letter handed to the select board would represent somehow
change in use.
A request for approval and approval without any action of either the planning commission, the DRB, or the select board. I think I use this the term, it seems a little squirrely.
Yeah.
That might
was
be
that a- their intention, was that this was the notice?
That's what they're claiming. But this letter was not given to the planning and zoning office at all, and wasn't. No one emailed Suzanne. No one emailed me. No information was given to us. I sat in on the meeting with Josie and Josh when she pulled out the site plan that she had and had emailed him that letter. And she said something about the select board changing the zoning. And at that point, I said, the select board no longer has jurisdiction. You would have to go to the planning commission. And she said, oh, okay. And that was the end of it. So I didn't, nothing came up again until the fire marshal called. And I guess it's a good thing he did, because we would not have been able to give them a certificate of occupancy on 14 units.
So the other comment I'll make, it seems sort of unusual to me in that at that meeting, I made a statement that my personal opinion is that we needed to hold to our current zoning and permit requirements, that any future thing we'd want to be thinking carefully about, which would not suggest that we had made tacit or overt approval of an increase from 10 to 14. So it's of some concern that we are where we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So also, maybe, I'm sorry, go ahead, Josh.
I was just going to say, they also did have to go to the DRB last spring, so they are well aware of the DRB process, and they were explained back then that it was the DRB's jurisdiction and not the select board's.
Yeah.
So we're not entirely sure what the overall excuse is.
I have two thoughts. I think there's a specific follow-up with Buttermilk LLC about where they are and what the next steps are or are not, or and are not, regarding apparently having constructed 14 units when they were permitted for 10. And the other thing that I think we should consider is what incentives or disincentives we have in our ordinances to encourage compliance with permits and discourage non-compliance with permits. It's not lost on me that if somebody can say, well, I get permission to build 2 units and I just build 3 and then you'll approve 3 later.
Right.
That probably doesn't speak to the spirit or intent of either the town plan, the zoning regulations, or the process. So I'm thoughtful that we probably don't want to encourage people to, ignore or fail to adhere to the specific requirements of permits. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's very cool. Thank you. In an effort to keep this away from our lawyer and align it with what's going on, I would certainly encourage the reach out again to Buttermilk to say, you need to come in, you need to have that discussion, because absent that, I don't want to start engaging our town attorney for something that is ultimately going to be or not going to be approved, because that adds to our cost, not theirs. So if this can be worked out somehow, and they can mothball those extra units or do something with them for storage until the zoning works for them. And maybe that would be a better use of certainly town finances.
Yeah, it's a fair point. We don't want to pull the legal trigger, if you will, too soon. So
yeah,
I think next steps
to
have
them,
a conversation.
They should be aware not to offend us either.
Yeah.
And then that there is the broader question of just what do we do with our permitting and ordinances about a permit is a permit, not a suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've had this same conversation in water and sewer with this development.
Yeah.
That's true.
They're not changing the percentage.
No.
No, so you're right. The square footage.
More. They just built more.
Because we talked about how, so they're not increasing square footage, which is what the permit is based on. So the permit fee wouldn't increase, But if they have completed those units and that permit does not, then the as-built does not match the permit, then you have to have an as-built permit, which doubles the fee of the original permit. So it really depends on where they end up. And if they, and Suzanne did say, we strongly encourage you to stop all construction until you've gotten this figured out, because, you know, we don't want to be like, yeah, go ahead and do it and then pay this double and who knows if the zoning will match. So, and they, she also informed them that the Planning Commission is considering zoning now that the town plan has been passed, and that she strongly encouraged them to also approach them about the situation with density and units and those issues. And we haven't, just so you know, we haven't reached out to the attorneys at all yet.
So next steps, you know, it might be prudent to have, and I think this was a suggestion from one or both of you, to have a select board member involved in that, partly to dispel any confusion about select board role or position in a meeting with Buttermilk. And then a follow-up question, and for this one, the question of ordinances or permit compliance, maybe VLCT would have some free advice on what other towns have done. I'm just thoughtful that having permits with no meaning, if you can build something other than permitted and have it approved retroactively, the permit review process seems a shallow exercise.
And right now they wouldn't be able to get a permit at all to begin with.
Why not? Because we're in interim zoning?
Because interim zoning's gone. So right now their underlying zoning does not support the addition of units, so the DRB can't actually approve this addition until the zoning changes.
As Mary suggested, can they hold off on those last four units and not rent them? And
that would be, so theoretically they could get a conditional certificate of occupancy. It's not something we really do, but it's a possibility. They would have to prove that those units are not occupied and that they're not being used temporarily or what have you. But it's still the, I'm not sure how it would be interpreted for the as-built part, because it is still as-built 14 units, whether they're boarded shut or not. So that's tricky.
Yeah. I'm just concerned about this project kind of railroading our planned revisions to our zoning. And if there's, you know, we want this project to go forward. It has had a lot of stumbling blocks, and we don't want it to get stuck. But this project has, you know, caused us to really change the way we've run our town and done our normal business. And I don't want this to now get in with, oh, we've got to change all of our zoning because otherwise Buttermilk's going to close up shop and leave. You know, we've heard this before, and I just don't want them to railroad our town planning process.
Agreed. I think we want to be sort of have an honest process, not driven by a specific business's current interest, and it does feel a little pushed in a specific direction that I'm not sure we want to go. I will remind those of you who did not participate in conversations about the Creamery parcel when we were engaged in the interim zoning. We talked at great length about what the right mix of residential and commercial was. And so I'm not, you know, I think we just want to be thoughtful about the process.
Which it sounds like they're sticking to, that mix.
The ratio, yes.
Potentially, although if you read further into the letter, they, you know, they didn't show us their entire hand of cards, but they implied that they would see a greater number of residential
in
capacity in building
yeah.
two as well.
But in building one, so, that, so I guess my question is, one, in building one, would this have been approved under interim zoning? Had they written the permit this way originally, would it have been approved?
I think it was 15 units per acre was the interim zoning path that got amended in 15, and I'm not sure how many acres that currently is. Because it's two parcels. That's the other thing that's funky.
Right.
But right. there we had a lot of discussion about the number and type of units.
Yeah.
And yeah, so this is deviating from those plans.
Yeah. Ever says, yeah.
So, comments, yes, in the front first.
Martina Pricing from the dance studio. I had to go before the board to ask to remove a closet. okay, and I had to dot all my I's and cross all my T's. This infuriates me. I mean, I came in and I made sure I did everything right and I rushed through it and I got all the things that this company could just toss the town around like this. I think there are a lot of people like me who have done everything we could to live within the guidelines and go through the right channels and maybe not done something we wanted to because it wasn't appropriate. And I think a lot of people in town, if they get wind of this, will be like, hey, you know, what's special about them? Knock it off. So I just encourage you to stick to your guns because I think a lot of people will be ticked.
Thank you. Yes,
yeah, very cool. Thank you. When I was on the board, there was something going on, and the board issued a cease and desist. And I'm wondering if, because they are only approved for 10 units, we give them, it is given to them that there's a cease and desist on anything exceeding 10 units, so that it does not stop the process, because none of us want them to pack up shop and go home. And it also is imperative that they complete all the applications that they have for their fire safety, for their insurance, for their commercial loans on this, that they are within the guidelines of their permit. Well, we've got 14 units. No, you're not going to have 14 units. You're going to have 10 units. Here's your cease and desist. So later on, here's your certificate of occupancy for 10, and here's your do not touch the remaining four. I'd like the project to complete, but you know, if they assumed they were going to slide this under the doorstep, wrong. And I appreciate this young lady with the information that she presented, how you know you really have to comply. Cease and desist, we do have violation in our zoning so that they can be handed a violation, but to allow them to proceed with the 10 units and cease and desist on the remaining four. And you know what, the bigger the project, the less apt folks like. If it's a single family, you know, you'll see everything. But if it's a large project, some things are overlooked. And I don't think this was overlooked. I think they just, that letter just didn't do it. Thank you.
Thank you. So in terms of next steps, maybe defer to Jess and Josh about what other actions like cease and desist or, you know, admonishment to adhere to the process, what penalties were empowerment do we have to compel compliance is really the question.
Well, right now they will not get a CO and they cannot occupy unless they have complied with their original permit. So until zoning changes, they are bound by their original approval.
So maybe we need to just communicate that in writing, and then at 14 you will not get a certificate of occupancy.
Yeah, and Susanna's done that.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's probably enough on that one for tonight. Any final?
I mean, I guess we can go from there. I mean, the only thing I would say, Bart, is that I agree that you shouldn't automatically get permits subsequent to, you shouldn't get automatically get post-facto permits.
Right.
But I don't think that's the situation. Again, just people, permits are given post facto if they are approved. Permits aren't given post facto for situations
right.
that are not allowable, right?
Right, you can't just throw something up and be like, oh, I built this, now I get
now
a permit.
Now I want a permit.
Right.
So I think there is a distinction there. I'm not okaying the action, but I think it's important to recognize that this isn't that we're approving unapprovable structures.
In a level of non-compliance, this is not a 10 out of 10?
We are not approving non-compliant structures. We're not approving non-permitted.
Wait, for example, like if someone finished
sure.
their garage, and then they were like, oh, sorry, I never came and got a permit, but that conversion was allowed under the current regulations, they could still get an as-built permit because it's an allowed use.
Right, but if it was not allowed,
then they
would
wouldn't get one.
They would not get one, and they'd have to undo it.
Well,
theoretically, undo it.
An example on Tilden Avenue, there was a demolition of a house and a construction of a 2-unit building, and my recollection is the builder wanted to build 3 units
mm-hmm.
and was turned down and instead built 2.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to saying, well, I really wanted 3, I was permitted for 2, I'll build 3 and hope that I'll get a permit for all 3 later.
But I guess why was he turned down?
Not allowed.
Three wasn't in compliance.
Wasn't allowed. So it sounds like had he built three, the policy is not that he would have gotten permitted for three post facto or as built.
Right.
So these guys won't get it unless we change the zoning.
Yeah, right. They're not allowed the extra four now.
Yes.
So right. It seems very
similar. Situation
similar.
Is a little bit different because the zoning has changed. I mean, the whole thing is pretty convoluted. But I would be interested in, again, if the 14 wouldn't have been allowed under the zoning under which it was originally permitted, I do think there is a distinction between that and the zoning would under which it was originally permitted would have allowed those 14 units, and they did it anyway. To me, there is a distinction, and I don't know what's actionable about that. I don't know, but
there's not a legal distinction, but there's a conceptual distinction. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
They were approved. Hold on. They were approved under interim zoning for 10 residential units.
Would they have been approved under interim zoning for 14 units?
They didn't apply for that, and it was part of a larger project where we negotiated commercial and residential densities. So this building had 10 residential units.
And there was a lot of conversation about traffic flow and impact, including water, sewer. So the 10 versus 14 may seem like a minor issue now, but at the time it was a somewhat thorny issue.
Yeah.
How many units make sense back there?
Yeah.
Also, in terms of the Planning Commission thing, the Planning Commission has no intention to try and push anything through. They actually had been approached about village zoning prior to this small disaster and had been discussing things about it in general terms.
Yes.
And they're continuing to do that. So that's why Buttermilk was encouraged to approach the Planning Commission about their issues as well, just like everyone else has.
Great.
All right. Thanks for the follow-up. And I guess keep us posted on next steps in terms of coordination within town government and Buttermilk. On to item C, letter of support for the Village Center designation.
So with the lapsing of our town plan, we also lapsed on our Village Center designation. So last week we met with the Vermont Department of Housing and Community Development to begin the process to get reapproved for our village designation. Let's see. So our goal is to have the application completed by February 28th for a March State Board review. And that application must include a document or a letter from the Select Board in support of that. We don't have the letter right now, but we will have that at the next meeting most likely. But just an update that we're proceeding to get that taken care of.
Great.
All right. Thank you. And the preface to that is that the Regional Planning Commission last week, the town plan was formally approved. So.
Nice.
So. We're also the first town in Chittenden County to get a determination of energy compliance.
Yeah.
To get
a determination of energy compliance compatible with the Public Utilities Commission.
What does that mean?
It basically means that we have done enough groundwork that now our town plan has a say in any section, the 248 proceedings that were like large scale energy development, wind tower, solar panel of large scale. We have a say in it now that we didn't have before.
It's huge.
Development happens in town.
Yes.
The town now can
have a say.
As opposed to your town plan doesn't address it, so we don't listen to you, then it follows a separate process.
Right. And we're the first town to have that.
In
good job.
Yes. It remains to be seen how that'll play out, but we're the first Chittenden County town to have it.
Well done, Jess.
Okay. On to item D, grants. Consideration of Rise Vermont grant to partially fund the community outreach program. This is built into our budget. We had discussed using one-time or unassigned funds for next year for the community outreach program. And this is a twist on it.
Yep, so this would give us $1,500 with no match required to go towards community outreach program should this be approved. And this grant is not in the budget, so that would be the savings.
So this seems pretty straightforward.
According to our grant procurement policy, we do need approval by the Select Board to officially submit the grant and get it going.
I move to approve submittal of the Rise Vermont Community Outreach Program grant.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That is unanimous.
I was going to vote it down and then move it. That'd be petty.
Part two.
You were lost.
Consideration of Rise Vermont grant for Recreation Committee.
Give that update since you were working on that one?
Sure. So I wrote a grant for another $1,500 to help us kind of breathe some life into the Rec Committee and possibly help breathe some life into the Economic Development Committee and possibly combine them or create a new hybrid committee to kind of bring those two back, because there's a lot in the town plan that involves recreation and economic development. Right now they're relatively defunct, not completely on the recreation side, but pretty much completely on the economic development side. And part of that is to explore shared resources with other towns. I know everyone's really interested in that possibility. So some of it's outreach and some of it's exploring our options. So that's just money to get that process started.
Do you have an idea of what you think the total process would cost, or do you feel like you could, this could be done for the $1,500?
Yes, yeah, so the $1,500 would cover like meetings, any like legal consultation. Like I think about 1,000 of it or 750 of it I put towards like a couple emails back and forth with the lawyer, and then the like advertising slash meeting holding. And then everything else is just staff time, which would just be my time. I don't think it's going to be that much of a lift since we already do meetings and we have them here. And it's just kind of to get it started, and hopefully if we get enough people with this $1,500, they can kind of function by themselves like every other committee does.
Move to approve application for the Rise Vermont Rec Committee grant.
Second that.
Further conversation? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous as well. VLCT passive grant opportunity.
So this one doesn't need action this evening, but merely an update that every year there are grant opportunities through VLCT and passive to get up to $10,000 in safety equipment for preventative safety issues. So we would pay 50% match on that. So it would be $5,000 going towards the $10,000 total bill. And Kelly Lane is working with department heads to identify some projects or some equipment that we could purchase that would go towards those. That grant isn't due until a bit later, so we'll be back with more details for an official vote by the board, but just a notice that it's happening.
How much safety equipment do we currently purchase?
I don't have a number off the top of my head, but I know that every year, I believe every year for the last number of years, we've participated in the passive program, whether it was for police or highway or water sewer, I think, something with manhole covers with a couple of years ago.
I would just suggest that, not that I don't support safety, but we don't have to identify new equipment to buy to fulfill this, right? If we have an existing...
If we could upgrade something like a vest or something...
You mean something that we've already planned?
Something that we have already planned to purchase.
Yes, right.
And put this towards
yes,
that, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The police vests are always part
yes.
of this.
Yes.
Right.
And those get updated every couple of years by law.
So, right, it's an offset of a plan thing versus let's come up with a hair-brained scheme
just
to buy something new.
Let's buy the safety equipment that we need every year to keep the employees safe, and then let's put this towards that. Let's not... find new safety equipment
right.
that we may not
offset a planned expense versus finding a way to spend
it. Let's keep everybody safe. Let's spend the money we need to do that, and let's put this towards that.
I know there has been some action, especially at fire, around turnout gear to replace outdated equipment, because we woke up one day and found that we had a bolus of stuff that we needed to buy.
By the way, example of something that seems like we could
stay ahead of it and use this. Yeah.
I think there's some warrants today.
Okay. So that's that update, and then Unified Public Works, UPWP.
There's one question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
One of the things I think that would be helpful in identifying the time frame for replacing these things is to do an actual inventory department to department and have a master list in the administrator area where all the programs take place. You'll have the master list in the town manager's office. The police chief will have one. Highway will have everyone that needs personal protective equipment we'll have it registered so that you all will know, like at a moment's notice, you know, and you, and Roger, you could just say, well, when was it last replaced? And you say, well, here's the information right here. But it also inventories how much you got, pretty much where you got it, you know, when was the last time the chainsaw was replaced? These kinds of things are important. And once the chainsaw hits your leggings, you need a new set of leggings. So they've served their use, but what they're used for is to stop the chain from going into your leg, and that whole unit has to be replaced. So having an inventory on those kinds of things, I think, is probably going to be really important for future planning. But again, that's one of those things that's, lucky you, Josh, it's off into the future. But I think it's going to be a helpful item overall.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So one of the things that with the wheels that started turning on this end, water, sewer, like 2 years ago, was the asset management, and we had talked about expanding it. So that might be a future agenda topic. Where are we with the asset management inventory and structure? Because it wasn't just capital assets. It was meant to deal with things like turnout gear and the replacement cycle.
Can you just describe briefly more about the asset management?
So in water, sewer, literally in all of the lines and throughout the treatment plant and the pump station, an inventory of all the equipment down to, like, you know, clamps and brackets and
anything
pipes.
Any piece of equipment. That
yeah. So then you go, and what's its lifespan and what's your anticipated replacement schedule to lead towards an asset management plan and future investment cycle.
And I think that we could, something that I've been thinking about, and discuss it again, but we have a bunch of cash and we're borrowing money to buy assets. It seems like we should bring those two together, and
that's another good future one for
borrowing money from ourselves. And sort of
if we look at our unassigned funds and what our grant or loan or repayment cycles are, is there anything we want to pay down sooner rather than coming up, similar to your conversation earlier, find new ways to spend the unassigned funds, use the unassigned funds to spend down current loan obligations?
Yeah, and I don't mean that we should spend the unassigned funds down. I just mean that instead of going to Peoples or TD Bank to borrow money for a fire truck, for any asset purchase, if we don't borrow money for it, let's use our cash and then replenish the cash as we go. So we're paying ourselves that 3% instead of TD.
Yeah.
But it seems like having an asset kind of list and aging on that would help us to know this is our annual capital expenditure. This is what we need to spend every year.
Okay. Anything else on UPWP?
So UPWP application was due Friday. It doesn't actually have to technically be approved till March because it's a review process and it's a funding request more than a grant. We put in a small request for about $4,500 to help kind of rework stormwater designs up at the school that need to be changed now that V-Trans has put their stormwater upgrades on a longer timeline than we want to do ours. It's a pretty small ask compared to what a lot of the UPWP requests are. They're usually in like the hundreds of thousands to millions. But we're kind of limited on what we can ask for because it's transportation planning money and it can really only be used for transportation and planning. It can't be used for anything more than conceptual design or scoping. So no implementation, no fancy designs, and very limited consulting work. So right now, currently as we stand, don't have a lot of projects for that. The Stormwater Master Plan is kind of our current pile of projects that could fall for that category.
So interestingly, last week at the Regional Planning Commission, I just noticed scanning through documents that there in the UPWP is some additional work by the state on the Route 2 overpass over 89. You may recall that at one point they were indeterminate whether it would be replacing the bridge or putting a new bridge next to it. So now that they're finalized on putting a new bridge next to it, there's additional final engineering work to spec that out. So it was just notable that it's not our project, but it's our town that's moving forward in its own speed, I guess.
For this project, have you looked at all at the state's, this DEC's program for Clean Water Initiative block grant funds?
I haven't yet for any stormwater master plan stuff, mostly because I haven't looked into what match is required for other water-related grants, because basically any match that we need for those has to come out of Pete's budget, not mine, so I don't have that much control over it, so everything that we do with that has to be run by him.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure what the match would be, but I know that there is some money available and that there are programs to look at the school projects that need to be addressed as part of stormwater master plans or as part of just retrofits that are needed for 3-acre impervious sites. So it's something to think about, and I can look more into that as well.
And as far as I know, the Friends of the Winooski is also putting in an ERP grant to do some of the other projects that are at the school.
Nice.
So hopefully they can work in conjunction with each other if they're both awarded.
Cool. Thank you. Anything else on UPWP? On to town center updates. How's the heat working these days, Josh?
I don't believe that's on the agenda, Bart, although it is all around us. That's definitely something we need to look into. But right now what I wanted to do with this one was, this is part of me kind of getting my arms around a few more things here. Got the post office lease that was signed last summer, and there's a few items that we agreed to do, so we're going to be going out to bid on those and getting those ready to go, so that we're going to hit our deadline with those, which I believe is the end of the fiscal year. And then also talk to Jeff Ford about the school lease for the upstairs space, and he thinks, apparently we're on a month-to-month basis right now, no one could find a current lease, and I reached out to Jeff, and he said we've been on a month, Jeff Urbanek said we've been on a month-to-month for a while with them. So that seems to be where we're at with CESU right now. However, Jeff Ford feels that they will be moving, but right now they're looking at the Underhill ID building. He needs to get an architect up there to get an idea of what space they could construct, and he thinks that it might be a little too quick to get it constructed this summer to move them. If they did get it constructed this summer, they would be moving by the end of this year, so December sometime. If they don't get it constructed this summer, they'll be shooting for next summer, and then they'd be moving out of upstairs probably in the fall is where he's thinking. But that does beg the question of what are the next steps for this building. And since I've started 3 months ago, and even prior to my arrival, I'm sure there's been a lot of ideas batted about. So I think we should decide on a process to get some of those ideas out on the table, figure out what the ideas are, look at the financial implications, and then start to make some real decisions about what we're going to do. And then the report from Breadloaf will play into that as well, because there's a number of improvements there. But depending on what we're going to do with the building, we need to figure out what we'll tackle.
You know, I think that makes sense. It seems to me that rather than jumping into here exactly what we picture, it's more a process question, because items on the table include what would we have for community space, for would we look to lease space to somebody. The police department is sort of a wild card. Clearly, their current space is inadequate, but if we were going to do substantial renovations on the building, is it feasible to think that they might fit into a remodeled town center building?
Yeah.
And, you know, round figures, if we get into this, it's a significant project. The heat being one example, that there are a lot of things you'd want to do, probably to maintain the historic character, but to upgrade infrastructure and maybe hit to a floor plan that meets the needs of whatever our proposed use is, as opposed to we have the old classroom rooms and try to make them do.
Yeah.
So I think the question is where we want to go with that kind of process. You know, when I started thinking about it, I think maybe a couple of select board members with like a work group or advisory group. I'm cautious about using the term committee because it suggests public warnings and Robert's Rules of Orders, and thinking it's a little more like conversational to start with. What
exploratory
we,
group.
There you go. Exploratory group.
Listening from there.
Nope.
So I know for some other folks in the room maybe remember this better than I, but in the past there have been some conversations about what to do with the building and what investments to make as well. Since when was the 1967 Snot Piano High School?
Correct.
Yep. When is CESU moving there?
Oh, 90.
So I don't want to like force anybody to make a commitment now. Maybe we can come back to this and give you a chance to think about who would be interested and start fleshing out a process. I think it needs to involve the town manager and some staff.
Mm-hmm.
It might be helpful to have planning involved because there are still where, you know, what district are we in and what do we want to look like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does traffic flow look like? Parking spaces, you know, all those things can figure into this. And arguably the police department, because we're talking about either keeping them in the building or not keeping them in the building, they should be represented, I think.
Yeah.
I think we should maybe hold off on assigning folks to sit on this work group as we're looking towards town meeting day and having one new member, if not two, to sit.
Timing-wise, it probably makes sense to, we might even put it out there and use town meeting as a time to drum up comments and interest.
Yeah.
And really throw it to the next select board, whatever it looks like.
Yep.
What's the lease payment that CESU gives us?
There is
a
question.
Yes, while we're looking.
If possible, with enough warning, you could actually have a what do you want to see happen in this building, just a suggestion box at the town meeting.
Yeah.
And that way, you know, that's, again, it's an exploratory group, but, you know, what do you envision, what do you see? And I know that when the prospect of looking at a new town center came up, we never, if the town had to build, you'd never have this built, because right now we're in an area that, you know, is a bonus. We would never have had the third floor. We wouldn't have that. It would be a much smaller facility with a much more specific directed purpose. We wouldn't have the post office. So visioning what could happen on the third floor or what you want to see happen here, you know, and you could actually have a little diagram. This is what we currently have. These are items we need. How do you see it fitting?
It's a nice idea.
You might get an architect in there.
Jess, I'm flashing back to some of the work on the town plan input process. Do you think it's feasible to put something together that's sort of similar, like, you know, visioning, what would you picture? I've heard comments from a number of people, but I don't know if it's representative of the broad group. One of the tenets I heard is people really want the post office to stay here.
Yeah.
Might be nice to have a group of two or three people pitch that at town meeting.
It's a good idea.
For input.
Somebody who's not on the ballot.
Yes.
So we'll have another chance to talk about this before. So maybe this is a continued item. Talk more about this next time. Jess, it's helpful to have you here because maybe we talk about what we might actually do at town meeting, either from floor discussion, but maybe hallway as well. Okay. So the question on the table, what is the CESU lease payment?
Yeah, find in there. I don't
we'll have to.
I'm just curious what kind of revenue are we looking at offsetting?
I want to say the post office was 90. One of them was 90,000.
Rate, annual rate of the post office is 93.
Okay, so that's
actually, do I have CES?
And Josh.
It's going to be something similar.
That's real.
But less.
Oh, really?
But less, yeah.
I think it is a little less than that.
I want to say 84. Hmm. That can't be right.
Random.
I'm sorry?
Nothing.
So we can look that up and maybe revisit it. What is the lease payment? And the other item you have here, Josh, is the Radiate Art Space lease?
Just a reminder that lease is up at what, end of March. So we need to look into renewing their lease shortly.
Presumably they're interested.
Yeah, I need to still reach out to them and
it's still just a dollar, though, right?
It's it just a dollar?
I think it is.
It's not very much.
Well,
it is not the post office.
So, right.
I thought it was
really art space is there as a more as a public service.
Okay.
It's like two stamps.
Thank you.
So one of their requests
for another like day, right?
Was I think they're interested in windows, as I understand it.
Right.
So that's one thing we might want to entertain. Generally, landlords don't let tenants replace windows without some prior approval and conversation. And if we're poised to consider larger scale renovations, which might include windows, window replacement might be seen as a short term, like replace a couple of windows, but you might want to use
these windows,
inexpensive windows that you could afford to replace again in a couple of years.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because this building is located in the floodplain, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So when we do renovations, there'll be substantial renovations, and we'll need to make the structure flood...
floodproof.
What is that called? Floodproof?
Proof. I mean, floodproofing.
So that the water can come in and out, right?
Yeah.
So really expensive windows.
Windows are considered maintenance, though, for this purpose. Taking out the plywood and putting in a window is also something to do with living spaces where... I know they had to have the door put in because of egress, fire, and all those other terrible things that could happen. But replacing the plywood with windows, regardless of the price, is maintenance. So that's allowed. But renovation up there would be beyond the scope.
Right. So once we do renovations on the building, we'll need to address floodproofing.
And you'll have to keep track of every cost.
Right.
Not that you don't, but you know.
So investing in expensive windows might not be a good choice.
In the near
there's
term.
A dollar value too. If the dollar value is greater than 50% of the overall structure, then you have to elevate the structure. Hmm. Been there, not doing it.
Hmm. It's out of the question.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. Okay. Anything else on town center? Item F, discussion of expiring terms for committees and process to notify public. So reminder that a whole bunch of committees come up in different terms after town meeting. And one of the things you'll recall from past times is looking sort of an inventory. So I don't think we need to look through the inventory, but there is an inventory. And talk about a process to notify people. We did have a policy also that talked about how we appoint people to the committee.
I think Roger did them.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Yeah,
and so talk about that, but the big thing here is notifying people, and it strikes me this is something we do on our website at a select board meeting and perhaps market it a little bit at town meeting itself. Here are the different town boards and commissions. Here are the openings. Here's what they do if you have questions, who to talk to.
Yeah, and in the appointment process, it talks about compiling a list of vacant positions during the first week of February. Vacancies will be posted on Front Porch Forum at the Times Inc. in February, with members of expiring terms also notifying those vacancies. And I think we can certainly add to that website, town meeting, select board. And right now, we've begun to we started to go through the list last week. Caught a few discrepancies, so we're going through making sure that we have a solid list of each committee and when those terms are expiring so that we can put out an accurate list. But hopefully, I would think by the next select board meeting we'll have that.
Thank you.
We can start advertising it.
Anything else on that? So that's another carryover item. On to item G, police chief recruitment update.
So hiring committee has met and extended first round of interviews to some candidates, which will start this week and go into next week. And then we'll be moving on to a second interview, which will be a bit of a process between a smaller breakout interview group, which will be larger than the first interview committee. It'll be the hiring committee plus the Richmond Police Department and then a representative from fire, rescue, and highway. And then that candidate will meet with that group for an hour, and then go to a public forum where anybody in the public is welcome to attend and ask questions of the candidate. And then the second candidate will come in and do the public forum, so the public is there for a 2-hour slot. and then they'll go to the breakout group after that. Right now, we actually have, looking at February, we just finalized it today, we're looking at February 11th for that process over at the middle school to start at 4:30. So that allows us for the breakout session from 4:30 to 5:30, and then 5:30 to 6:30 for public forum, 6:30 to 7:30 for public forum, and then 7:30 to 8:30 for the second interview with the second candidate. We were a little constrained by the times over at the middle school. They just out of there by 9 o'clock, so we moved it up a little bit earlier than we maybe would have liked to have. But we figured with enough notice to get it out there to the public, we should have a pretty well-attended group.
And what time is that?
So that would be February 11th, starting at 4:30 for the interview session. The first public forum would be at 5:30. And we're still finalizing exact details, and we'll get that publicized far and wide.
And we think the location is?
Middle school.
So for those, the one conflict, I think there is a tax abatement hearing scheduled that night for a small percentage of the voters.
Yeah, I was trying to find a night when we didn't have a conflict, and it was pretty challenging to find a night where there wasn't another board of some sort meeting. So I think, unfortunately, something had to give a little bit.
All right, thank you. Any other questions on the police chief recruitment? Item H, update on funding for the Volunteers Green riprap. So one of the things I'll mention, Mary asked this in the beginning, and what I have.
All right, I think you skipped over.
Oh, did I?
Activity report.
The what?
Sorry, the police activity report.
Oh, I'm looking at a previous version.
Here, do you need a copy? Yeah. Please go.
Yes. Item H, police activity report. Is there anything else different?
Oh.
Okay. Police activity report, we have it here. One suggestion that Mary Houle actually made in the police activity report, this is to pass on to the police department. In the report, it has a date and then a description of the call or activity. It might be useful to see the date and the time, or the start time of the activity or incident as well. And I don't know how difficult that is. I don't want to make it more difficult, but it becomes sort of a public document where you start to see the pattern.
Because I think when they radio that they are stopping, so they should know.
I think that's correct,
I've seen it in there, you know, occasionally in the past. I think it's a great suggestion.
I think it's just the style has changed from who's been writing them over time.
Yeah, so I think in asking it just makes for a more useful, perhaps, document. Okay.
Two sort of questions. One, this is going back maybe a step or two, but has somebody talked to the Howard Center about our interest in joining the community outreach program?
I did send a letter to the executive director after it was discussed and the budget was approved 2 weeks ago.
And then I would, and I just since we're on the police, I would say if we get this grant, I would maybe see if we can put it towards moving this, our start date on that up from FY20 to
sooner.
Sooner.
I think one of the questions to the Howard Center is where they are with staffing, because I think there was an economy of scale where they said if enough people go in, they have to hire another person, and when was that? So part of it's probably coordinated with other towns. So we could either start sooner or spend less next year. And maybe just find out if it's even plausible to start sooner based on hiring date and other town funding decisions, or funding decisions from other towns for community outreach. Okay, anything else? Police department, police activity. Volunteers Green riprap.
So John Cart was greatly helpful in putting together a request to go back to the Conservation Commission. We submitted that to Judy, she reviewed it, and has since sent it out to the rest of the Conservation Commission for their review and has us on their agenda for their next meeting in February, which is February 12th.
So Mary Houle asked a question about this earlier in public comment, and I'm looking at a Conservation Reserve Fund policy that was approved in 2005. It has the same language that I saw in a 2015 Article 9, if I recall correctly, that reauthorized the Conservation Fund and had the same language here. So it's probably been cut and pasted several times. The Select Board will administer the fund after considering recommendations by the Conservation Commission, any acquisition of a parcel of real estate by the town, meaning acquisition of a whole parcel and not solely its development rights, requiring in excess of $20,000 from the reserve fund, will require approval of the voters. So my interpretation of that is that the Conservation Commission receives requests or proposals. They make a recommendation whether it's yes or no, and the Select Board, I believe the Select Board has historically approved 100% of the proposed approved expenses, but it strikes me this language would suggest that anything that they reject would also be forwarded as a recommendation to the Select Board.
I believe the interpretation of the folks on the Conservation Committee is that if they don't recommend something and the Select Board decides to move on it, that the Conservation Commission holds the funds. I don't think that's true. I do not believe the intent was ever that, you know, if three out of four people don't like something that is brought to us, we still have the obligation to bring it forward to the Select Board, and you can overrule our decision, we support it, we don't support it, but I think that you, as a Select Board, control the funds. There seems to be some thought process, which I don't share, that we, the Conservation Committee, control the funds. We just make a recommendation.
So that's how I read in quote marks what is in both the policy and in the current approved article that says recommendations. The Select Board will administer the fund after considering recommendations by the Commission. So administer, to me, interprets we accept, modify, or reject a recommendation. And I'm not saying, like, I don't have sort of a horse in the race about how people might feel about it. I'm trying to interpret what the language actually says. And that's how I read that the Select Board will make a final decision. So I think one point of clarity is to the Conservation Commission, your recommendation could include funding it or not funding it, and either way, it's a recommendation that gets forwarded to the Select Board. That's how I read it. I don't know if the rest of you read it the same way. David?
Yeah.
The piece that is missing for me is that if the Conservation Committee decides they don't want to recommend it or don't want to forward it on to you, does it die in the Conservation Committee? That's the part that I had a little problem with. And I'm not the one that wrote the regulation, but if we don't recommend something, then it doesn't go to you. As far as I'm concerned, as a Conservation Committee, since it is town funds, the obligation is that it, whether it's recommended or not, needs to be presented to the Select Board so that you're 100% aware of what all the recommendation or what all the consideration was, whether it be for it or against it.
You know, so I guess arguably you could read it multiple ways, and I haven't read this in great detail, but I think I conclude that a recommendation is not just recommendation to approve, but a recommendation to either approve or reject. Okay. Or maybe a recommendation to partially fund. You ask for 25, I'm going to give you 20. I think it would go forward with the request was 25, we recommend 20. And I'll just be upfront, I view this about all of our commissions and boards, I'd be reluctant to arbitrarily overrule or modify them, that we should do so thoughtfully and with some degree of caution. But as the elected Select Board, we're the only bums who can be thrown out at town meeting day.
Yeah, just you can think. Summarily throw us out with rules day too. I don't like that one. Bye-bye.
So,
but the point being that the Select Board is accountable to the voters, whereas the Conservation Commission is not.
Correct.
And I think that's why it was designed this way and why the language has read the same way for, it would appear, to be somewhere around 15 years, if not longer. So administer the fund after considering recommendations. So I think that might just be closing a loop with the Conservation Commission about, you know, if you receive a request, your decision is a recommendation that has to be either ratified or rejected by the select board that administers the funds.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. And the project coming back to us next month, as a recommendation for funding or not from the Conservation Commission, won't impact our budget because we have taken unassigned funds to pay for the riprap project in the current budget, right?
So one would, I would observe it, it could modify the budget detail but won't affect the tax rate.
Okay. Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is the riprap interest line in the budget?
Well, we took out a loan.
So we borrowed money.
Right.
To pay for it out of pocket when it was constructed during the summer, before we actually had the money to do it.
Why? We have so much money in the bank. Why? $1,000 in interest on that. But
yeah. It's a fair point. I think part of it is to be able to put it into a budget. I think if I can speak from both participant and observer, there was some sense of urgency about the riprap given what we had seen in a couple of places. And so to move it forward, that was a way to move it forward under the select board's authority pending the next budget.
$2,719 to borrow, $138,000. For a year that we had in the bank and still have in the bank.
Well, it depends on what you're talking about having it in the bank, because we might not necessarily have that liquid on hand right off to pay those bills.
Right.
Well, we'll talk more about liquid assets and borrowing and spending at a future date. I think it's a worthwhile conversation. Anything else on the Volunteers Green riprap? So that'll be continued. What's the cycle? Conservation Commission is when? The
12th. So the next meeting after that, 20th, 19th.
Yeah, so a reminder to those present, the next select board meeting will not be on the 18th, but the 19th. Because
there's no holiday that bumps that at all on the 19th?
The 18th is a Monday, which is
okay,
President's
Day. Thank you.
Yeah. So for anybody who showed up here last night, our apologies. And a reminder not to do the same thing on February 18th, but instead to show up on Tuesday, the 19th.
So our next meeting is not the 4th?
Yes.
The 4th and then the 19th.
Yeah. And the 12th is, of course, in between. Okay. On to item I, certificate of highway mileage. This is an annual.
It's item J.
Yeah, sorry. I'm one off.
It's the same.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going on.
Highway mileage.
It's an annual certificate completed in order to determine our town's share of state aid for town highways for fiscal year 2020. We've had no changes in our highways, so it's a pretty easy form to fill out. And we're going to take a look at reviewing it, and I just need signatures from the select board on the bottom, and Pete had a chance to review it as well.
Okay. So we can also do this as a motion, to approve the certificate of highway mileage for the year ending February 10th, 2019.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous. And I will pass it around for signature. Detour request for Notch Road Culvert Project.
So this is a project that's going to happen sometime this summer.
from V-Trans for the culvert that carries Notch Road underneath the highway in Bolton. So the bottom of Notch Road comes out, there's a little box culvert in it that needed some repairs. So they'll be doing these repairs this summer, and their proposal is to do them overnight and then just detour traffic up Stage Road for anybody who needs to get up to that section of Bolton.
They can do it in one night?
Oh, I'm sorry. Overnight, it'll be probably longer than that. Like, while they're doing the work, it'll be overnight.
Why would you do it in the winter? Stage Road is so nice.
No.
I know.
Sorry, not in one night. For the nights that they're working, they'll be detouring that way.
So it will be a detour, but only overnight.
Only overnight. During the daytime, they'll really get traffic through.
Do they? And they need our approval.
Yeah, they said in a letter, this letter is request approval from the town of Richmond to sign Stage Road as the detour to connect traffic back to US 2. While work is performed, the Notch Road culvert concrete project anticipated taking place in the late summer or fall of 2019. So they just.
What happens if we. Can we extract conditions on, like.
You can't ruin the
figuring
road.
Out the traffic light in the middle of town? Where's this
make Stage Road nicer.
Be ashamed if something happened to it.
In exchange for the wall, I'll.
Should we make a motion to?
So just to be, yeah, why don't we start with a motion to approve the AOT detour request?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Further conversation. The only thing is to be clear about dates and hours,
yeah.
Including both residents affected.
Yeah.
You know, there should be some notices. Presumably they're going to have the electric signs up, but also then fire and rescue and police to know there's a route that will not be available.
I'll follow up procedures when I email them back.
Beauty, thank you.
Random comment, I was driving down 89 in New Hampshire today, and there was a big yellow billboard sign that said, "Caution, it's winter. Drive like it's winter." Got a kick out of that.
Helpful advice. So, all in favor of approving the detour request for Notch Road Culvert Project, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Update and discussion regarding proposal to create parking areas for trail and recreation access at two sites, 2500 Cochran Road and 600 Jericho Road, the former Steel Water Tower site on Jericho Road near Southview Drive.
Okay, so this is a follow-up on the Trails Committee's request to create parking lots on those two spots. We have a meeting set up for tomorrow at 4 p.m., it's January 23rd at 4 p.m. here in the Town Center with Gene Bresser from the Trails Committee, myself, and Pete Goslin. We've also notified Mary Houle as an adjoining property owner on Cochran Road and adjoining property owners over on Southview Road, same as we did prior to the meeting of the initial discussion. And I believe Jess is planning on attending as well with some site plan layouts and some thoughts on the planning side on this. This meeting is really just to try to get some ideas out there as far as what would these look like, what does the Trails Committee really want to do, what can we do within current zoning, what can Pete do, come up with some ideas to come back to the Select Board then for an approval to move the project forward. So there will be more time for comment on these parking lots at a Select Board meeting, the meeting tomorrow, so just to sort of get some ideas.
So it's kind of the first substantive conversation, and thank you for inviting the adjacent former property owner and the adjacent property owners. Is anyone, do anybody want to say anything about those two?
If it's Lane Fridge Marine, are we going to delay it?
Well, we're going to, I at least want to talk at a table at first to kind of get some ideas.
No, I just mean the conditions tomorrow afternoon are supposed to turn to crap. It's supposed to be bad.
If you can't make it in. I thought you went for a site visit.
Nah. I walk down there all the time.
Play it by ear.
Yeah, I guess let's see how it looks for the rain and everything tomorrow.
Call it 3 p.m. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good thought, though. Yeah, we'll see what the weather looks like. Yeah.
I have a dentist appointment at 1:30, so I'll call. So I'll be sliding by here, but I'll call or stop in.
Sounds like a plan.
Is there anybody here from Southview who has anything to say about that?
Looks like I'm from South.
But no comment.
One thing that I know they mentioned last time was Jim Monahan brought up maybe signage where folks could change behind. Because I have since heard a lot about, you know, different
naked bikers, you know, not biking, but changing after work. And I had no idea because I'm not a biker like that. So anyway, I think it might be an opportunity to apply for a Rise Vermont grant to fund any of these trail signs, changing kiosks or something, but something to think about. Something to think about, because I didn't realize what an issue that was.
A repurposed phone booth.
The Richardson's over at the Brown Church can fill you in on all the nakedity.
I had no idea.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
And apparently in Richmond, they do have a naked biking event.
Oh, God, Bard, you know a lot.
I understand it's all college students, or predominantly college students, but there is a naked event. And so, from recent media coverage, we rediscovered the fact that it's possible to exit your house naked and walk around as long as you don't disrobe in public. So
yes.
Apparently their error is disrobing in public as opposed to arriving naked.
Yes.
I've never heard the whole TBD before. That's funny.
Anything else to say about trail and recreation access? It seems to me that once we come up with a plan, we would contemplate what improvements, however primitive, might be made. Another question came up, could we improve if we turn the steel water tank site into a parking area that's, you know, appropriate, that is there a way to improve pedestrian access between that parking site and the school for those occasional overflow events? So it's got a pinch point of a funky underpass there, so I don't know, that just might be something to contemplate.
But that would be great, because I've heard a lot of requests about sidewalk connectivity between Southview and the school. So if we could tie all of that together, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Zip line, maybe?
Ooh, yeah.
I think the kids would like that part.
Yes. The town revenue source.
Put a rope there. That's
right. We put in a water quality thing and make like a water slide.
Okay.
Flushing the water tank, just...
Moving up to the short water, well, not water, bottle related. Follow up on residents' request regarding bottle redemption practices at the Richmond Market. So this is not really under the authority of the select board or town offices, but we do have a brief follow-up.
Yeah, so I followed up with Becky Weber from the Agency of Natural Resources, Department of Environmental Conservation, Waste Management, and Prevention Division. And she followed back up with me regarding the bottle redemption at Richmond Market. She spoke to them about the concerns. They claimed to be in compliance when she spoke with them. She told me that they usually don't go out and investigate every single call they get, but if they do receive multiple calls about a specific business, then they'll send somebody out to take a look. So her advice going forward is, you know, if somebody sees that, would bring it up with the store owner first and see if they can remedy it. And if that doesn't get remedied, then you can certainly call Becky Weber back, and she would add that to the list of complaints.
So the presenting complaint or position is that they should accept any redeemable item regardless of whether they sell it or not. And the complaint is they're only accepting the brands or items that they sell?
Or maybe not even everything that they're selling, I think.
Hmm.
So this might be in the minutes, or for people who are walking, if people ask about it, that's the next step, that they are supposed to accept everything. And if they don't, first store management, and who would they call in state government?
So it's Becky Weber at the Agency of Natural Resources, Department of Environmental Conservation, Waste Management, and Prevention Division. It's a mouthful.
Let's start with Becky Weber, is it?
Becky Weber, yeah.
Okay. Next item, follow-up on the Ford Explorer manifold repair work.
So I included the memo in the packet, but also got a briefer update from Paco today. He did file a complaint with the Ford Motor Company, and they contacted him back, advising that the repair in the front leaking manifold was the town's responsibility. The Ford Motor Company has been voluntarily repairing carbon monoxide and exhaust leaks on the Ford Explorer police interceptor vehicles by sealing off the rear of the vehicle where exhaust odors can enter.
And Heritage Ford advises that the Ford Motor Company concurs that the repair was performed on our vehicle in October of 2018. So they did the rear one. This one was a front one that's not covered.
But he did file a complaint with the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, right? So having that complaint on record, if Ford is forced or encouraged to do a recall, we can be reimbursed for that. And I am glad that we asked Ford to help us out a little bit. I think it's a big ask on Ford for us to fix their defective product.
So apparently the word is that the manifolds are leaking in multiple...
Oh, yeah. It's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a leaky manifold except on a 1970s era vehicle.
Yeah, same here.
Thanks, Dave.
Being aware of that and following up with
you. Yeah. Thanks for following up on that.
Yeah. Excellent. Our next item is approving the minutes of January 7th.
So moved.
2019.
Second.
Any further comment? All in favor of approving the minutes of January 7th?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. So we are on to Roman numeral 4, executive...
No, we have warrants.
Oh, I'm sorry, warrants. Yeah.
So I went through the warrants today. I like our system. It's nice to sit and go through
start with you
and chat with Connie about it. And there were a couple late fees. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary.
Can I bring a question to you about one of the warrants? Now, I go through the personnel items,
yeah.
The timesheets,
yeah.
And this one is causing me concerns. It says regular hours. What are the regular hours? He doesn't fill out any paperwork consistent with anybody else. And there is a pay amount, but this isn't satisfactory to me, regular hours.
I guess I don't know.
500 hours. I don't know, but
yeah,
it's just of concern.
Constable.
Is that Andy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. My understanding with that agreement is that he gets, 3 hours per week, I believe, for animal control.
Yeah. Okay. So if he could just put it down, I wouldn't have to make this trip.
So
he fills out a form that he sends to Connie. I think this is online.
Mm-hmm.
It just says regular hours. So if he could just put down 3 hours, then...
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. Rather than just regular.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A numeric value.
Yes. Gotcha.
Roger, thanks for doing that.
If
you ever have a free hour, a Friday or a Monday.
I haven't even had lunch yet.
Yeah. You have a slow kind of waffle on here?
Waffles. Oh, that's
sorry.
You.
Nice. I think, you know, that should be your contribution to the select board meeting.
Kendall's a beekeeper. He brings honey. It's only fitting that Roger brings syrup.
I bring good cheer.
You do? Barb brought chocolate.
Roger?
Yeah.
When you reviewed this, there was an item on the budget expense worksheet that said county tax, $22,000. Is that the court, Chittenden County court system? Does that ring a bell with anybody?
Sorry, which one was that?
The $22,000 tax.
You know what, this is budget then. County tax. Is the $22,000 2018 and the $22,000 for 2020, is that the Chittenden County court system that, it seems to me that it's...
Which... Mary, what are you
it's,
looking at?
It's line item 10-7-10-380.00, county tax.
380.00.
I can identify just about everything else, but it's like, it's not regional plan. I know that. No, it's not regional plan.
Right. And it's not, what
category? But I think it seems to me that there was a... Chittenden County court system that we were tied into and that we have to join it.
Was it special investigation?
No, it's not that. Nope.
There is like a county tax that each town has to pay a certain amount
for county functions like court and.
Okay, that's the one I was.
But I think that's probably what it is. I can look.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. But it just county tax. Just, there's no county tax. But if it's specific to the court system or something, then I guess that's what it would be identified as. Thank you.
So I have one purchase order. Richmond Rescue number 3694, our current year's quarterly appropriation in the amount of $18,200. Looking for a motion to approve that purchase order.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous. Thank you. Anything else on warrants and purchase orders? So that would take us to our executive session.
Can I, one quick update?
Yeah.
Just reminded me just now. So this morning we did, actually Christy first noticed that our website had some funny postings on it. I got in this morning and looked at it, and at the bottom of the homepage, if you go down to the bottom, there's like a blog entry almost that has like headlines and then post, body of the post. And there was a bunch of headlines and posts in German. And I started looking at that, well, what's going on here? So long story short, called GoDaddy. We got in there. We found out that it looked like somebody had got the, somehow online, picked up a username and access and was going in there and posting things. So we disabled that account, changed the passwords for everybody else's login. They looked and made sure that they didn't see anything else going on from the GoDaddy side. They think that's all it was. It should be fine. But just a note that if you see anything funky on the website, please just alert me as soon as you can, and we'll dive in there and make sure we tackle that. So thank you, Christy, for that
thank
alerting
you.
Email. And anybody who, I mean, my town cell number, you can just text me, too, if you wanted to, because the quicker we can get on these things, the better off we would be.
Nice. Thank you. Okay. Do we have the document for executive session? So I'm looking for a motion to find the premature public knowledge about a personnel issue, specifically performance evaluation of Josh, would cause the town or person to suffer a substantial disadvantage.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The second motion, move that we enter into executive session as a select board with Josh to discuss his performance evaluation under the provisions of 1 VSA 313A4.
So moved.
Second.
I think. No, I'm sorry. 1 VSA 313A3 having to do with the appointment or evaluation of a public officer or employee.
Are you also inviting him to
yes.
participate?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We are now moving next door into executive session, and then remind everyone, exit executive session there, come back here, and adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.